Blog Talk Radio.
Hey guys, good morning to all of you guys. How you guys doing? Welcome to the Seatman on Sports podcast. My name is Jimmy Seatman. Going to be joined by DC David in a little bit and talk the NBA Finals. Golden State Warriors are up 2-0 in the series. Game one probably should have been won by Cleveland. We all know what happened there. George Hill missed the three throw. J.R. Smith had a gaff. Warriors took over in overtime. Game two, a little bit less close, at least up until the end. Warriors end up winning by 20 points. Series is 2-0. Yeah. I think a lot of people were counting the Cavs out. That would be me included. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the chances. We'll talk about LeBron James, where he can maybe go this summer. We'll talk about all of that, NBA-wise. Also, Stanley Cup Finals, the Washington Capitals, the Chokers, the people who could never win, are up 3-1 in the Stanley Cup Finals, headed back to Vegas, playing on Thursday night. What would a win for the Capitals and a Stanley Cup victory mean for them, mean for the city of D.C., who has had a sports drought? And could it help maybe fix other teams that have struggled in that area as well? So we'll get to all of that. Obviously, living in the D.C. area, it's been a very exciting time. I think, the Capitals have brought a lot of excitement to the area. I think, especially for people who are more casual hockey fans. And I know, hockey guy will sit there and complain about, these aren't real hockey fans, and how many players can you name on this team, and blah, blah, blah. I don't think it's kind of moment it doesn't matter. I think when a city embraces a team, like the city of D.C. and the surrounding areas have embraced the Capitals, then I think you just have to take it. So, and now joining me now is Dave. Dave, how you doing, man?
Hey, man, I'm doing really good. Feeling confident.
There you go. I think we can definitely get to them. Definitely get to the Capitals a little bit. I guess, like, real quickly, because I've heard some people's opinion on this. So I think there's a lot of people in hockey especially who are really protective of their sport. And, there's always this people, the big hockey fans who, like, tell everybody how much better hockey is than all the other sports and how much tougher it is. And I think there's almost a sense of people feeling like, oh, and all these people jumping on the bandwagon and you don't know hockey and da-da-da. But I always think it's kind of weird when people feel that way because I feel like all this energy and all of this, people getting behind the Capitals in the area is a good thing, even if they're just casual fans. I mean, I think most times people have to realize a lot of sports fans are casual sports fans, And I feel like especially like hockey fans especially have some sort of Napoleon complex because their sport doesn't get talked about as much on national airwaves and things like that. And so it's almost just like you have some people who are like, oh, no, these people, you can't root for the Capitals unless, you were rooting for them back in 1998 and all this kind of stuff. And I always feel like that's kind of odd, and it just feels like, again, like kind of a Napoleon complex, and especially with hockey fans because – you talk to people who are big hockey fans, and the first thing they always tell you is how much better hockey is than every other sport. So I don't know how you feel about you've seen the support in, like, the streets of D.C. and just probably all around in general. I mean, I don't know if you've noticed, but I've seen a bunch of more Capitals gear, people more proudly wearing it. And you know what? Maybe it is a little bandwagon, but that's just the nature of these things.
Yeah, I agree. You're always going to get bandwagon, and that's fine, yeah. The more the merrier, I tell you. It's been very impressive. I'm kind of proud of them. Even though they're not, that's okay. We'll take all. Believe me, hockey needs all the fans they can get. I mean, like they say, nobody's watching this series. What I read the other day, even the major hockey cities in the league, your St. Louis, Detroit, Pittsburgh, they did not even send. Local media did not even send anybody to cover the Stanley Cup. Even within their own league, there's just not enough interest. It's just, I mean, really, the only two cities really watching are probably the two that are playing. But you know, I'm okay with that because I understand. Hey, hockey's probably my least favorite sport. But I'm have been for a long time, a huge Caps fan. When the Caps get eliminated, I'm pretty much done. I don't really watch where the other sports. I'll watch closely, baseball, basketball, football. When my team gets knocked out, I'm still very interested in the games. But
well,
hockey, I'm not.
Well, with hockey, well, the thing is, you know, you only have time for a certain amount of sports. And I think for a lot of people, unless their team isn't it locally, hockey is that fourth wheel, at least in American professional sports. I mean, I'll be straight up. Like, I don't watch very much hockey, especially in the regular season. Like, when there's basketball on every night or it's still baseball or football season, I'll pick that over it 100 times out of 100. And even in the playoffs, I mean, the thing with the NHL playoffs is they go exactly on the same timeline as the NBA playoffs. And, again, I'm more likely to watch an NBA game than a random NHL game. But, I mean, you definitely get more interest when a team that you're around or a team that you root for. And I would never promote myself as a Capitals fan because – It's not like if they lose, I'm heartbroken. And if they win, I think it's cool. But I'm not going to be cheering up and down. And you know, I'll be happy for the Capitals and for the surrounding area. But, yeah, I don't follow them with the same passion that I have with the Jags and the Nationals. Like, I mean, it's just, you know, one of those two teams wins a championship, you know, I'm heads over heels. With the Capitals, it's just kind of like a cool story. And I think that's how a lot of people feel, you know, especially with the narrative that, oh, D.C. sports teams, it's just all tragic and the Capitals are chokers and they can never get it done and all this kind of stuff. And now people I've seen are making excuses. Well, they're beating an expansion team. Does it really count? Da-da-da. I mean, this Vegas team, I mean, first of all, you win it, you win. Who cares who won it? And second of all, I mean, this Vegas team had lost 3 playoff games and the entire Stanley Cup playoffs up until, you know, and so they were pretty dominant. I mean, you don't see that in hockey very often. So, you know what, yeah, maybe this is a starless team, maybe besides Marc-Andre Fleury, but it was still a really good team. It was the team they happened to face. And, you know, I mean, like in hockey, a 3-1 lead is not as safe as it is in baseball and basketball especially. But, I mean, if they win, I mean – people, because I think there's a lot of hate in the hockey world for the Capitals because they've always almost been seen as the team that, they're all talk and, you know, they win a bunch of games in the regular season and then they don't pull out in the playoffs. And a lot of people don't like Alex Ovechkin, you know, and so you just see, like, and I felt like when you watch, like, the Capitals-Penguins series, you could see, like, I'm usually not one of those people who thinks commentators take sides or whatever, but you could see, like, it almost was like a defeat for hockey when the Capitals beat the Penguins because that was, you know, because the Penguins are, like, the NHL's team and Sidney Crosby is, you know, the NHL's player and the Capitals were just, I don't know, I think there's always been a lot of vitriol pointed at the Capitals for whatever reason that people don't like them or people think they're overrated or they think Ovechkin's overrated. And I don't know how they feel.
Well, Jimmy, I got so many thoughts on hockey and the Cavs and the players. I could take over this show for the next half hour. How could you not? Pittsburgh's got, Sidney Crosby's a North American player. He's from Canada. Cavs' best players are from Russia. Definitely don't like the Russia players as much as Canadian players. That's just how it goes. How could you not like Ovechkin, a guy that scores goals? The hardest thing to do in hockey is to score goals. This guy seems to do it on a regular basis. His whole career, not only does he get 50, he's always close to 50. He's the only guy that gets to 50. There's only a few guys even get into the 40s. This guy it's the hardest thing to do is to score. And he's a big hitter. What goal scorer in history ever was the biggest hitter on the team? Now, Wilson's probably the biggest hitter, but Ovechkin's right there with him. Nobody, physicality from him is amazing. even in the sport now where they, you know, they've really cut out a lot of the physicality, especially, you know, they're trying to get out the, you know, sort of the flash dirty hits that bring on these concussions and injuries. So a lot of that's been taken out of the sport, but there's still plenty of physicality. It's always on the border. Wilson's always close to either getting suspensions or close to suspension, because you got to have that physicality out there. The star player in hockey only plays 20 minutes. He doesn't have an effect on the game as in the other sports. You know, LeBron's playing 48. You know, Durant, Curry in the 40s. You can have much more effect on a game than you can in hockey. You really, it's really the ultimate team game. You really got to count on, you know, what's really getting the Caps over the top is the second, third, fourth line that's contributing. They're getting goals from everywhere. It's, you know, for me, I mean, if you wanted to make hockey, at least have hockey challenge for the, one of the top sports, you'd have to take, change a couple rules. I think just eliminating the blue line, opening up the whole ice. If you mentioned, but they're not going to do that. I get it. But to me, that's what I would do. Just try it at least, just to open up the scoring, open up the flashier plays. There's only so much you can do. That's why they have to skate so fast up and down the ice, because you can't pull it back. It's tough to control the puck without getting stolen, because everybody, the other team's got sticks and they just can knock it away from you. So that's why you got to fly up and down as fast as you can, try to beat the other team up, try to get it a 2 or 3 on 2 or 2 on 1 advantage. I mean, just imagine if you didn't have the blue lines, you could be flicking long passes up in the air, trying to hit the a guy who left a little bit early down the sidelines, and then coming in on the, you have all these, and people go, oh, you're going to have cherry pickers. Guys, I don't think you're going to have cherry basketball. You don't have cherry pickers. You have guys that take off early, but you don't have guys just can't stay down.
And if you do, you can't game plan around it. I mean, I'm sorry.
Exactly.
I mean,
you adjust to that. They would, like, but you'd open up the whole ice. You'd make up in the air passes. Most of the passes have to be on the ground. You'll see some guys try to clear it with lift passes. That's just trying to get it out of the ice, out of your zone without getting an icing call. But man, just imagine this, what it could be like. You might, you have 12 to 8, 12 to, but you're not going to do that because it would, you know, you affect the scoring, the history of the game. The goal things would change. I mean, they know they have a problem with goal scoring. You know, they're adjusting the goalies' uniforms next year. It's been in the works for 2 years, but you know, they're going to be leaner to their bodies, not so bulky, make the goalies a little smaller, and hopefully they can get a few more pucks through. But yeah, I mean, people freak out when I talk like that, but to me, nobody's watching. I mean, do you want to, I mean, then we, you just don't care as much. Yeah, it's a Canadian Europeans game, pretty much. It's so much is played in the United States because only Americans are going to take taxpayers' money and pay for arena. Canada, they're not going to do it. They're just not going to spend taxpayers' money for the owners to put up these stadiums. So they're all built in the USA. That's why you got them in, you know, you wouldn't have thought of places like Arizona.
Well, then also, I mean, you think about Texas, I mean, all these, Florida. most of these arenas are also basketball arenas too. They're not like, I mean,
a lot of
places are like the Capital One Center where they play, have the Wizards and the Capitals. You know, like the arena Vegas plays in is where Summer League is played in, you know, for the NBA. So it's just, it's one of those things where they're already there anyways. So, no, I mean, it's just at the end of the day, like, I do get that there are some people who, when you're just a fan, I mean, I can understand why you don't give a rash ass about, like, what makes a sport more popular. You want this, what you want is best for the sport. You see that a lot with baseball fans and how things have changed over the years. You know, they don't, a lot of baseball fans don't care about what's, you know, best for the game in 20 years. They just want to watch the baseball that they want to watch and how they think it should be played. But I always think that sports should be innovative and seeing, you know, what they can do differently, because, you know, the whole idea of sticking to something because this is how we've always done it is, you know, how you fall behind. Like, you know, the only reason you're doing something is because you've done it in the past. You know, you have to think of why you're doing it and why this makes sense. And things like that. I mean, you know, I don't see them doing anything like taking out the blue lines, and I would do that too. There's a lot of things I would do.
At least try it. I would at least try it in the. I would try it in the preseason or something, and just see or try it.
Or like the AHL. I mean, or you know.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, just because you know.
Give it a shot.
I agree. I mean, and here's the thing. I don't know what hockey can actually do to make a lot of people care. Because here's the thing at the end of the day, there's a lot of places in America you can't even really grow up playing hockey. And it's an expensive sport to play. Like, I think how you get into sports as, you know, in youth is by playing them. And you know, and one reason I think basketball has become very popular is because it's so easy to play pickup basketball anywhere. You can all you need is a hoop and a ball. You know, baseball. You know, it can be harder, and football is a little easier. But like hockey, I mean, I just remember being interested in playing it as a kid, and it was just so expensive for all the equipment and everything like that.
Well, you know, the most expensive too is ice time. You know, ice time is very expensive.
Yeah.
And that's why they have weird hours too. I mean, you'd be practicing at 5 a.m. or 11 o'clock at night because it's just valuable for that ice time. And then I think you'd really find out. That's why almost any team can win in hockey because it's really a crapshoot. You saw if Vegas had scored some goals in the first period the other night, it would have been a whole. I mean, they dominated the action. I mean, I understand. Caps have dominated many teams. They've outshot many teams. They've outhit many teams. They've out-hustled many teams. But they didn't score the goals. You know, the goals didn't go in. And now the goals are going in, and then you can see they're missing, like, wide-open nets sometimes. The goalie gets out of position. They've had two or three. The goalie wasn't even in the goal, and the guy just hit the post, or it was, you know, the save by Hopi on the one, but he just threw a stick in there and got lucky. So much is things going your way. Now, I think if you opened it up, you would finally, the better teams would probably win. Here, because the games are always so close, that's why I always say it's not a huge difference between the 8th seed and the 1 seed. And when the games are 2-1 or 3-2, it can go either way. It's a luck, it's a bounce, it's a deflection. Now, I think if you open it up, I think the better teams generally will come out on top. You know, they'll win, you know, 12-8, 12-6, something like that. Because they have so many more opportunities, and then you wouldn't have five guys standing in front of the goalie with their and not only do you have the goalie who's athletic and you know great shape and flexible, and they're incredible now. That's what Wayne Gretzky praises. I mean, I've seen him in interviews praising Ovechkin for his amazement of how he scores goals. Gretzky said he'd probably struggle scoring 50 in this modern era. When he was scoring 70 in those days, because defenses, they weren't as big, they weren't as athletic, the goalies just weren't as good. It was just easier to score. He said, now it's just difficult. That's why you only see one or two guys even getting over 40. You can see as he's matured and grown and he sees what it really takes to get it done. This is why they're praising him like crazy on NBC on the coverage, because normally they hammered him for years. Because of his lack of trying to get back and get so much your forwards have to get back and check and play defense too, not always score goals, and he was more the goal scorer that didn't really take the defense blocking shots. Now you see him putting his body out there, he's going into the net, he's getting more physical. He's always physical, but more on the defensive side. He's just all in. He's just all in. He's more of a leader. So, I mean, his grasp of the English language was always a struggle for years. You can see he's got that now. A motivator. I've never really seen him, all the years I've been watching him, how he's teaching the young players on the bench. You know, I joke sometimes where I say, he's really motivating them, but I always joke and say, hey, pass me the buck. You get back, play defense. Obi, stay up front. And then, then you really get to see the advancement of Kuznetsov, who we call Kuzi, okay? You got Backstrom, it's Backy. You got Wilson, it's Willie. You got all these nicknames for these hockey players. It's great.
And they all end in Y.
Yes, exactly. They all end in Y. But Kuznetsov, you can see, is probably he's right behind Crosby as one of the best all-around players. He can score. He can pass. He checks on defense. The thought that he was injured after that game, was it game two? Yeah, game two, he got popped. He just didn't know if he was coming back. They had, you know, hockey, they don't tell you the exact injury. It's either lower body or upper body, and they never zero in because they don't want the opposition just to crush them in that area. That's, you know, they'll pound them if it's his wrist or his arm. And but for him to come back really was the key, because without him, it would have been really difficult. He's leading the team in everything. I mean, he's a goal scorer, points maker, great passer. Yeah, see, the Caps, if you look at the two teams, you can see Vegas is the obvious. I mean, the ultimate team. They don't really have any superstar players, except they're probably their goalie. But the Caps have so many skilled players. You can see on their power play, they pretty much stay with this unit almost for the whole 2 minutes. Where Vegas, if you look at them, they rotate all their guys on even scale because they really don't have Ovechkin, Kuznetsov, Backstrom, TJ, Oshie. I mean, what an incredible player he is. If you just watch these guys on the ice, they're just so much fun to watch. I mean, Oshie, I mean, if you see the physicality on his moves, I mean, he decked that guy Miller. He broke his nose. They put plugs in his nose. The guy comes back out. What a tough guy. Oshie hits him again, knocks the plugs out of his nose. I mean, it was, I said, what are the odds of the same guy hitting the same guy on the other team so hard? They had to, you know, pretty much carry him off the ice. So, yeah, it's been a lot of fun for me. I'm hoping they can put it away Thursday night because, they lose it. Yeah, they're not really expected to win in Vegas, but you know, it's just, you're right, Jimmy. It can go wrong. And so it ain't over till it's over.
Oh, yeah. No, I see this all the time, but I've seen it here too. It's like, oh, I want them to come back and win it at home. I mean, no, because if they lose, you know, game five, and then you're like, well, but they can come back and win at home, and then they lose game six. I mean, now, and now you want to put these things, trust me, it'll be just as sweet for everybody in D.C. that if it's on the road, like, you'll be just fine. Like, I mean, it's just, I've never gotten the obsession of, oh, let's just win it back home. Like, you don't want to risk it any further. Especially in hockey, because 3-1 leads in hockey are not that insurmountable. Because there's so much randomness, and I think with hockey, I think the randomness, the part that so many things are like not even based off skill, but based off random deflections, and you know, just is I think one reason that, like, at least in basketball, I think a lot of people and in baseball can point to, oh, that was a skill, you know, that. You know, being able to throw that pitch that effectively, or you know, being able to hit it a shot from 30 feet, you know, like Steph Curry does, like that's an actual skill. And then when a team scores two goals off of like deflections, because literally the strategy is to, you know, stand in front of the goalie so that it may deflect off you, you know,
right?
Like it's just so I understand why some people, and also again it's just. You don't play it growing up. You probably, you know, you don't understand it as much, especially, like, you know, not in the north part of America and Canada. Like, it's just not as embedded in the culture as much either. So, with Ovechkin, you know, he's a perfect example of why, you know, when people label people, you know, they can't win anything and they never will, how it's just, You until someone's career is pretty much over, I mean, you just can't assign that label to anyone. I mean, it's just, and maybe it took him time to figure it out, and maybe he's just on the perfect team. But at the end of the day, like, I hate to say it, but is Ovechkin any less great if he doesn't, if they somehow lose? Like, what if they lose their last three games? Is he any less great than if they won on Thursday night? I mean, it's just, and if he does, you know, but yeah, I mean, you don't, I always hate when people will say, I think the whole thing now is like, oh, James Harden can never win a championship. Well, how do you know that? The guy's like 28 years old. I mean, you know, 3 years from now, he could have two championships. I mean, I think that's been said so much about so many players in every sport, honestly. But it's just, I never get that attitude of, you know, X player can never win. He just doesn't have the guts, or he doesn't have it. Like, I mean, because it's just, at the end of the day, some people just had bad luck. And I think the Capitals just had bad luck, and now luck is on their side.
Yeah, well, yeah, definitely a lot of truth. I mean, that's so true. I mean, you look back and, you know, I was watching the NBA channel last night and it had, you know, Isaiah Thomas, Charles Barkley, Mikhail, Shaq. You know, they were talking about, you know, good times and bad times. And Isaiah Thomas just talked about how they had to lose a couple times to the Celtics, to the Bulls, and had to learn how to win. He says, you know, they thought they had that series won against Boston, and then Bird steals it from Isaiah. You know, Isaiah said, man, that was most, it's the hardest thing he's had to deal with his whole life. He hit the winning, she hit the shot that he thought was the winning shot to put him up. And they got the ball back and had it out of bounds. And he just, Bird just made an incredible play. He says, I looked at it 100,000 times. He just, that's what made him special. He just read well. I just lobbed it in. He left his man, jumped in front. And then he said he was telling the story. It's funny as hell last night, but he, you know, but just how you have to pay your dues sometimes. Maybe Harden has to lose a few times from the Warriors, has to learn how to win, has to learn how to play the right way to win games in that situation. You know, it's not during the, you know, changes in the playoffs than it is in the, you know, during the regular season. And I think Steph Curry is kind of showing everybody what a great player, what an incredible great player he is, you know.
Oh, yeah. It's just funny to me how people will sit there and say, oh, well, James Harden, he can never win. Well, he was a game away from going to a finals in which, you know, Houston probably is favored if they get to the finals. So it's just – and it's funny. People say that about LeBron, too, as kind of crazy as it seems now. I mean, there was a whole narrative around LeBron James not being clutch and not being good enough and things like that. I mean, there's that with Peyton Manning. Unless you do it, like, your first year, like Tom Brady did, or like Russell Wilson. Like, Russell Wilson, for the rest of his life, never has to worry about anybody considering if he's clutch or not. Even if the gaffe they had in their second Super Bowl against the Patriots, Russell Wilson, Ben Roethlisberger, another guy who won a Super Bowl really early in his career, those guys, they never had to worry about it, and just because they got it done early.
Right.
Who knows,
right,
you know?
Right.
You know, like, I mean, it's just, you know, and so it's funny how, I mean, like, you look at guys like, you know, two rookies this year, like Ben Simmons and Donovan Mitchell. How long do they have to play before, you know, we start saying, oh, well, they can't get it done? Or, you know, there's already talk about that with Giannis and Anthony Davis, you know. And so I just always think it is unfair, and especially in today's NBA, especially, I mean, you need really good teammates around you. Because especially, you know, as long as the Warriors continue to exist, or teams like them continue to exist, you're never going to just do it by yourself. So I guess we can transition that to the NBA Finals. The Warriors are up 2-0. Game one was really close, and you had the missed free throw by George Hill and the J.R. Smith gap,
hey,
and the Warriors blew them out in overtime.
Game two was
closer throughout, yeah.
I just stopped you just for a second. I just want to add one more thing to the hockey. With their harder cap, you know, you have a minimum you have to spend, and there's a maximum you have to spend. And then there's no penalty for going over. So much more difficult situation for NHL general managers. You know, the Caps, that's, you know, they had to release some really good veterans, and they didn't help them win. They helped them make them the best team during the regular season, but they couldn't win the Stanley Cup with those guys. But to keep your TJ Oshie, Kuznetsov, you know, these players, Burakovsky, these young players, you have to pay them. And once you do, they had to release some really good players. And then they had to really count on their youth, the Stamets, Stevenson, the Jacob Vrana, Brett Connolly. These guys have stepped up in the playoffs. Devontae Smith. I mean, these are guys, they had better players that they released, but they just didn't. But because of the salary cap, the hard cap, you have to make big, tough decisions. Where, you know, basketball, how, and if you're willing to pay the penalty, I mean, you can. They, you know, the salaries that these two teams that are, they're way over the cap, paying big penalties. I mean, they, you know, the Cavaliers aren't even going to make money if they win the championship. They're going to lose money, but they win the championship, and that's what they're going for. So, you, So it gives them that option. I mean, that's okay with me. It gives them the option. They can, you know, you got a team like the Wizards. They just can't. They're not going to do it. I mean, they're barely over now, and they're you know, they don't know. You know, they're not going to be a team that's going to go any deeper. So anyway, it's just strategy. I just wanted to throw that in. It's a little tougher in hockey, I think, for the general managers have to maneuver. You know, they got to pay these guys well, the good ones, and then you've got to try to make and hope that you do a good job drafting, and those guys can help you win. So,
well, yeah, I know. I know one thing. Adam Silver mentioned at his press conference before the finals was maybe the addition of a hard cap. Because honestly, the tax is already a hard cap for a lot of teams. And I've always said that. People think that the luxury tax, it helps smaller market teams because bigger markets, bigger market teams, like, they won't pay. But it's the exact opposite. The Lakers will pay the tax. They have to. They did for a while. The Warriors will. I mean, Cleveland will. LeBron's there, at least. You know, the Clippers have paid the tax, and the Nets have paid the tax. Like, big market teams will pay the tax, but teams like the Grizzlies and the Pelicans and – you know, even the Wizards or the Hornets, those teams aren't ever paying the tax. And so it's honestly an advantage for teams that are bigger market teams because they'll be willing to pay it, but there's you know, no way in hell that any of these little smaller market teams are. So, like, I know the luxury tax is put in there so that they think that, you know, teams like Golden State won't pay a gajillion tax dollars, but the thing is they're way more likely to, and like than a lot of other teams in the NBA, these big market teams. And so I think a luxury tax actually hurts small market teams more than helps them because it's basically, you know, for a team like the Wizards, you know, maybe you think about not re-signing a guy like Otto Porter at the time because of luxury tax concerns. Meanwhile, a team like the Lakers or the Warriors, if they had the same situation, they would deal with, you know, with, you know, in the blink of an eye. So, so I think the luxury tax ends up hurting teams, especially smaller market teams, and especially with them being like a cap crunch this year, especially there's going to be a lot of teams who treat that, luxury tax as a hard cap this summer. But,
I mean,
the NBA finals. Okay. Go ahead.
Well, game two. Well, no, I was going to say, you want game two. I tell you, you just saw what a great coach Steve Kerr made some adjustments, not only adding McGee, give him a different look, which I thought he should have done that in Houston. I know he didn't believe that he needed that size against Houston, but you know, because they almost lost, I think they just needed to show him a different look at times. And that's all. I'm just saying, play McGee 35 minutes, you know, just play him more than you play him some, even play him at all. Just give you a different look. But you saw him get the ball out of Durant's hand. So he didn't isolate so much up top and then post up Durant down inside. And then he can pass from that position or he just has a mismatch on everybody down there anyway. But he was so much more under control. 10 out of 14, super efficient. Curry was just – I think that finally saw the going to Rodney Hood. You're going to give him a shot game three. Again, a guy that should have been getting some minutes anyway, whether you're upset with him or not, whether he's performed, but he deserves, I mean, Clarkson, I just don't get it. I mean, he just looks terrible. I don't know, loose. And then J.R. Smith, I mean, I know he made bonehead, but his defense just wasn't good enough because his guy's torching, every guy he covers is torching him. And if he's your best defender, then you are going to lose four straight. But, yeah, don't even try anybody else. Just go ahead and lose with him. That's fine. At least
yeah,
with Korver.
I don't know.
At least with Korver, Korver you're going to get some points. Korver can shoot at least.
Well, I mean, that's the other thing. Is Korver has made 1-3 in the first two games. And
well,
I mean,
how many has he taken?
He's played a decent amount. I think Korver is effective probably literally against any team in the league besides Golden State. But Golden State's just not – they don't take people like other teams will help even a little bit off Korver, and that's when he finds a spot, and he runs around the floor a lot. But, I mean, they just – they just don't leave him. And, you know, it's just hard for him to get open. And, I mean, Korver's effective in a way where he has so much gravitational force to him. He's not like Steph Curry, but where, you know, he spreads out the offense and opens up lanes just simply by being on the court. And that's what can make him an effective player. But yeah, I just think, against Golden State, I mean, it's just, it is harder for him to be effective. I mean, here's the thing.
True.
Cleveland, the last two series, besides one game, it was game three against Boston where they shot 17 of 34 from three, so that's 50%. Besides that one game in the last two series, they're shooting 24% from three. They simply are not going to win if they – like, I mean, and some of that is just shots going in. Like, I mean, this is a team that throughout all of their runs against, you know, Golden State and through the LeBron James era has always been a good three-point shooting team and a volume three-point shooting team. And they made nine threes in game two. Steph Curry made nine threes by himself. Eventually, points are going to add up where it's just like, you know, unless you're shooting 60% from the field hitting your twos, you know, you got to hit some threes. And, it's not only that they aren't, like, making them, they're not getting the shot attempts up either, which shows that Golden State's playing good defense as well. It's just, it's one of those things where they had to win game one. They had to win game one, and they almost had it. And if they won game one, you know, maybe they have a shot. And that was kind of the whole thing is, it's crazy how, like, you know, LeBron played a, you know, perfect game pretty much. And the thing is, you can't expect to be LeBron to be any better than he was in game one, because game one was all-time greatness. I mean, that was his playoff high. He was uber efficient. He was nailing shots from the outside too, which is what I think was the most impressive part. He had everything going, and it's like, in game two, I think he had 29, 13-8, and people were saying that he's disappointed. You know, I mean, it's incredible the standard that he has to live up to. And I mean, they need production outside of him and Kevin Love. And Kevin Love's been good offensively in the series, but it is interesting that they've gone to a switch everything defense, because how they beat the Warriors, you know, before was trapping Steph Curry a lot on pick and rolls and things like that. And honestly, especially when Looney or McGee is in the game, I would trap Steph Curry on the pick and roll and make him pass it to McGee and make McGee make a decision with the ball, you know. But it just seems like, you know, they're just very switch heavy. And then all the Warriors are doing is just getting, it's constantly on both sides. LeBron waves for the guy who Steph is guarding to screen him. And on the other side, Steph waves for the guy that Love is guarding to screen him. I mean, it's just, it's that 30 times a game, both sides, just getting Kevin Love on. And I don't think Kevin Love has been bad necessarily. He just can't stay in front of, you know, Steph. He does a little better on Kevin Durant. But, it's literally just come over here, set a screen, I want Kevin Love on me, or come over here, set a screen, I want Steph Curry on me. It's just, I don't know if you've noticed that, but that's what the whole, games have been.
I've noticed that big time. But also in game two, you saw Kerr went more to double team on LeBron, get the ball out of LeBron's hands. And that's why he only had 29 points. And he was feeding these guys in the corner that are missing, you know, like Gundy kept saying, these are all open shots. Yeah, but that's why you get 3 points for that shot. It's not that easy a shot. And then when your confidence is down, or you're afraid LeBron's going to get mad at you, or you've missed a couple, it's a little bit more pressure. All of a sudden, that's even a tougher shot. You know, if you're just not flicking them up there like Curry and Thompson and Durant without a thought, confidence just looms with these guys. I don't care. And not only did you mention Curry had nine threes, and I don't think you mentioned he broke the record of Ray Allen getting nine, but he also had five in the fourth quarter alone. He was 5 for 5 after that little confrontation with Jerko Kendrick Perkins. I'm like, what is he? He thinks he's something. You know, you listen to some of the quotes he made. He actually thinks he's good. That's what's funny. He actually thought he was some special player in the league. He was just a role player. He could even play now anyway, because the game has even changed since he hasn't played in a couple of years. But then, you know, he tried to get Curry. He left his feet so Curry could try to come down on his feet, hoping that Curry hurt his ankle again. Believe me, you know Perkins, you know that's what he was thinking. His feet probably are like size 20, so they probably sit real close to the line, and he wasn't going to move. He wasn't going to move. He was hoping Curry come down on it. And then to talk like, you don't want to mess with me. Who are you? Why are you even there? But you don't play at all. And obviously, you're supposed to be this slash assistant coach. Wait, the other reserve players stink. So you're terrible. You're just not getting anything out of the players. Believe me, you could. Why wouldn't you try? Like, there's a little Spanish point guard. What's his name? The guy can make. I've seen him make thousands of threes over the years. Yes, he's an older guy, but on this team, Clarkson is missing all these open shots. Why don't you try someone else? Like, a Hood's finally going to get a chance tonight. He might not do anything. Probably because he hasn't played in 2 weeks. You got to play. You got to take shots.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I want to get back on the court. I want to get back on the Korver point. At least they're trying to cover Korver. You know what I mean? They know he can make shots. They don't want him to get going. So you're right. They don't give him shots. But J.R. Smith, he's passing up wide open shots. He was afraid to shoot. Oh, my. I said, are you kidding me? I saw him twice. The ball came to him. He's open. He passes it to Clarkson or someone else. I'm like, why are you even out there? You're weak on defense. So everybody thinks he's great. Even the guys he's covering are scoring in near 30, and he can't stop them. Yes, he's close to them. Just because you're close to a player don't mean you're effective. If you watch the Houston series, you saw how difficult it was for the guards to get going for the Warriors. Believe me, the refs were on their side. It was very physical, holding, pushing. It was tough for Curry to even run across the lane. But here he pretty much has all the freedom he wants. Like you said, I'd be trapping his butt, get the ball out of his hands. Because you saw what Curry they put the ball more in his hands and got it out of Durant. They just think Durant tends to go isolation when he gets the ball. So move him around.
Whoever is the center on the floor is Looney, Jordan Bell, McGee. I make them pass it to that guy first. You rotate over, and then you make them make a decision with the ball, which they're not used to doing. And I'd still rather have it in either Clay or Draymond's hands, because Clay is not the best decision maker in the world. And Draymond, well, he can be a very effective as like a point forward. He does tend to turn the ball over a lot. So it's just like, I keep seeing all these people, well, you got to get physical, you got to get physical. Well, that's how you end up with George Hill and get like two fouls in the first like 2 minutes of the game or whatever. But, they have to switch up, you know, what they're doing. And, you mentioned like Jose Calderon playing. I think if Jose Calderon steps out on the floor and actual like meaningful time, I think LeBron will just walk out of the building. It's just, you're right.
Well, He almost walked out of the building the other night. Taking out his team. He almost walked out of the building the other night. He couldn't. You saw him, that camera angle they showed. Boy, he was upset with Lou. He was furious. He could. First, he was shocked that he gave up with 4 minutes to go and down 16 points. Jesus Christ, you hit a couple threes. I've seen teams come down from 10 points in 1 minute. You're talking to me. You're giving up with 4 minutes to go. You got to play the game the next day? You've got 3 days off. My Lord, they're giving you such a break. LeBron, he didn't say, we're quitting? With 4 minutes to go? It doesn't look good. But, you know, a steal here, a couple threes, boom. All of a sudden, we got a game again. So I was shocked.
Yeah.
4 minutes to go. I thought they should have gone another minute or so. But,
Also, you mentioned the thing about JR passing up shots and throwing it to Jordan Clarkson. I mean, you got to be real careful when you pass up shots and throw it to Clarkson, because you're probably not getting the ball back.
Jimmy. And that's I noticed that too, man. That boy, he tries to make too much happen. He shoots all the time. He tries to dribble and loses control. You're like, man, he wasn't ready.
It just seems like it's just too much for him right now. It just doesn't mean that he's never been an effective player in his career.
Exactly.
But
we know that.
I just think when he plays with LeBron, I mean, it'd be one thing is to have him out there for, let's say LeBron actually sat like 8 minutes in the game. It'd be one thing to have him out there when LeBron isn't out there, because he's at least somebody who's not afraid to shoot the ball. But you just see him, and he has these drives, and there'll be open guys, and he just like won't even look at them. Doesn't mean that he can't ever be a good player in his career, but it just, you know, I mean, every team needs a guy who can score, especially in the regular season. But he hasn't been as bad defensively. He's had a couple good steals here and there, especially off like help defense and stuff. But I mean, I think you do got to play Rodney Hood. I mean, Hood was a guy again, like, you know, who especially in the Pacers series just couldn't do anything, and by the Raptors series, I kind of had moved on from him at that point. But I mean, he has a skill set where he's at least useful in this series, and I think you have to use him. I mean, you know, I know he's played decently, but like a guy like Jeff Green, I mean, I just, you know, he's had a lot of these wide open corner threes, and I feel like he hasn't made any of them.
And he's getting nothing in the lane. Remember, he was so effective against Boston. He's non-existent. And this is typical of his career. This is why everybody, you know, that's why I called him when we've had one of our other shows. I mean, he's one of the most frustrating players. Like I said, he has a James Worthy-type skill set, but he don't have a James Worthy-type attitude.
I think he has athleticism, but I mean, he's never really been that good in his career. Like, I mean, it's just, eventually it is what it is. But, you know, he's 31. He still has some upside left.
And I'll say this, too. Here's another thing I like to say, and it has to do with Green and a lot of players in the league. Because of the way, like Charles Barkley was talking about last night, he says, you know, when you just take these athletic guys and you just stand them in the corners or out behind the three-point line, and this is, he says, how is their game supposed to progress where in the day where the Warriors just get so much more, yeah, they shoot lots of threes, but sometimes the threes come off their movement. Who moves any better than Curry? Who passes and then cuts behind somebody and around somebody and then comes out on the backside, and then there's the pass? You know, you can see Green. The other players just wait for him to get open. I mean, he moves. He just moves constantly. He passes quickly and then runs behind somebody and gets behind the line and gets a – he only needs a split second. But at least they get movement.
Yeah, I mean, I will say I just imagine in my head Jeff Green trying to do that, and I just imagine him, like, tripping over his feet trying to run to the three-point line.
Oh, please.
I mean
– the guy's an athletic dude, man. I mean, he could run down the lane.
I mean,
get some nice jams.
He has pretty good, like, straight line athleticism, but I mean, he's never been. I mean, I've never seen, you know, and also a lot of that, you know, yeah, it's just, you know, it can be, you know, you want to run a certain system, but some of that is just, I mean, you think about guys who are just good cutters in the league, cutting toward the basket, away from the basket. You know, Jeff Green has never been what I would think of as like a cerebral player. In fact, like, very not close to that. I mean, he's not the kind of guy who I see, like, you know, doing, like, a lot of bad. I mean, he's never been that guy in his career. I think some of that is just, you know, it is what it is. But, and I definitely wouldn't want to see the ball in his hands either, because he doesn't have a very tight handle. So, I mean, I get what you're saying, but, I mean, Jeff Green is the perfect type of guy who, like, you know, 20 years ago, people would have fallen in love with and keep getting chances. And he's still, you know, obviously, I mean, he signed a minimum deal this year. He was running out of chances, but it doesn't mean he can't play in the NBA. He just doesn't really do. I mean, what does he do well? I mean, that's the thing. Is like, he's never been good finishing at the rim in his career. I mean, he seems like he's a good player, but he's just never. I mean, this is the first year that he's played that his team has been better with him on the floor than off the floor. And I think a lot of that probably has to do with LeBron. So,
Of course. Now, yeah, some players but we haven't even mentioned who's coming back tonight to play. Iguodala's back tonight. So all of a sudden, and he's feeling healthy. So
well,
you're like, oh,
I mean, I heard he was questionable, but.
Oh, really?
I
saw yesterday, pain free, feeling good. Actually, they say he's been pain free for 4 days. So I think he is going to play tonight. I think he might not. He's not going to play his normal load, but just having a guy that can play 15 minutes with his skill set is effective. Just gives him another player.
Yeah,
but
we'll see. I mean, I think they could probably afford to sit him tonight, especially if they went up 3-0.
Well, they could afford it for sure. Hey. But if a guy's ready to play, he's ready to play. I mean, whether when you know what I mean. But if he's not, then right, he should sit. But there's, you know, but they're saying he's pain free for 4 days. He probably could have played some of the other game. They said that's the thought process they had. Well, let's see how it goes. And it went so well. You're right.
And teams say that all the time. But considering it's the NBA Finals, like, I mean, it's funny. Like, if it was a regular season game, how many times do you hear, "Oh, if this was the NBA Finals, he'd be playing." You know, I just sometimes I do doubt when teams are like, "Oh, he could have played." It's like, well, then why didn't he? Like, especially at the end of the season too. I mean, you're talking about, like, especially if, like, would he have played if they were down 1-0? Like, I mean, it just, it's one of those things. But I don't know. I like I said, I think before the series started, I think if Cleveland wins 2 games, they should throw a parade, especially at this point. If they get it to a game 6, I feel the same way. I think they had their shot. I mean, I think there's a lot of people who I've seen that are very confident in Cleveland winning game 3. And I don't know how you can sit there and be that confident that they're going to win it. Like, they'll probably win 1, but I mean, there's a lot of people who are like, "Oh, they're going to come back home and, you know, they're going to start making their threes," but they haven't made their threes in a while, you know?
Yeah, but that's
J.R. Smith, don't
let the first 2 games fool you. You go back home, and then all of a sudden you just start hitting threes,
you know,
start playing better D. The team turns it over.
Outside of the Raptors series, they haven't shot well from 3 all playoffs, like at all. Like, I mean, like, we're talking about under 30%. I mean, that's that's not good. Like, hitting 30% of your threes would be not good. But hitting under 30% of your threes, that's really bad.
I mean, that's like the old days when they first came out with the 3-point line, team shot like that. You're right. That's not very good. And they got players that can obviously do it. They just got to do it. But like I said, that's why it's a 3-point. That's why you get 3 points for that shot. It's not an easy shot. They make it look easy at times, but that's why teams live and die by that shot, especially under pressure. Like free throws, you know, under pressure, you can make them in the first quarter, but can you make them in the fourth quarter? You know, different mindset. The mind plays games on you. It really does. It really does. So, yeah, they could definitely, I mean, it's definitely the key to the series. They don't win tonight. It's over. I mean, I don't care. I mean,
do you think if somehow the Cavs, like, get it to 6 games, that, you know, the difference between getting swept and getting it to 6 games sways LeBron's decision on whether he wants to stay in Cleveland or not? Or do you think, unless they win the championship, he's probably just gone?
I can't read that guy. Why he would even go back to Cleveland was amazing to me. You don't see that ever, him going back to a team. Especially when you're in your prime, you see it at the end of the career, like Wade or something. But shocking, he even went back, and he's going, taking him 4 straight times now to the championship. He could definitely leave now. Maybe his kids are getting older. Maybe it's not as big a deal to be there in Cleveland now. Maybe he wants to have a better opportunity somewhere else, because they would have to do some heavy duty revamping, which money's not an option there. So it's definitely possible. I don't know, Jimmy. It's one guy that's tough to read. I have no idea what he's going to do.
This NBA offseason is going to be a crazy one, because not a lot of teams have a lot of money. There's a lot of teams who are unhappy with where they are and feel like they need some sort of change. You have LeBron, you have Paul George, and maybe even Kawhi Leonard available. I just think it's just going to be a crazy offseason, just like last offseason, because it's just, you know, again, there's so many teams who feel like they just need a change. You know, like maybe even the Wizards or a team like that who just feels
Right.
You know, the Trailblazers, are they going to trade CJ McCollum? You know, there's a lot of, you know, what are the Rockets going to do? You know, like, they're like, You know, the Rockets are always eyeing flexibility, and, you know, like, are the Bucks, like, okay with the roster they have? You know, like, I mean, there's a lot of questions, again, because there's not a lot of – there's, like, seven teams who have cap space this summer, you know, because the cap never spiked up as largely as people expected in the summer of 2016. I mean, there's just – that's why, you know, with, you know, the whole, like, free agency thing, I mean, you could – would LeBron pull off something like Chris Paul did last summer and opt into the last year of his deal and then, you know, get traded somewhere? You know, and like that's how something like him going to Houston, you know, could work, or him going somewhere else. So, like, it doesn't necessarily have to be like the Lakers, the Sixers, just because they have cap space. I mean, the only reason the Lakers are even talked about as a destination is because they're going to be the only team in the league who will have probably two max slots, you know? So, I mean, we'll see what happens.
What was that quote by Chris Paul? Was it yesterday, day before, that, you know, it's going to take the super max contract to keep him? So you got to decide whether you want to pay.
Everybody knew when he opted into that, like, $19 million player option to go to the Rockets. Everybody knew there was some sort of wink, wink, you know, we'll take care of you type thing. And if that's the price they had to pay, you know, it is. But it also is one of those things where it's like, Daryl Morey has been so shrewd with contracts he's given out and how he operates his teams and is constantly wanting flexibility. I feel like they'll meet somewhere in the middle there, because I just – and the other thing is, I mean, for Chris Paul, I mean, plain honest truth, who else is giving him four-year max? Who has money?
Yeah, nope. Right.
I understand there had to be some sort of wink-wink deal for him to opt in. I mean, he left a lot of money on the table, to go to Houston. And there was, you know, there was something in the deal there. But so I don't blame him. And also, here's the thing. Chris Paul is the head of the players union. You know, of course he's going to say that he wants to, you know, but I mean, I don't see them giving him – if they gave him a five-year contract at that number, I would have to imagine some of that would be partially guaranteed or something. I mean, it just seems like no way. You know, but we'll see. But, like, again, like, I mean, who's going to pay him? I mean, the Sixers aren't going to pay him. The Lakers probably not. All the other teams that have cap space are all rebuilding teams, you know, the Suns and the Mavericks, like the Pacers.
Who would
the
pay
Pacers,
him?
Like, that's the thing. Nobody would pay. I mean, like, I just, you know. Cleveland's already over what would be the hard cap for a sign and trade. Like, you can only go a certain amount over to do sign and trades. You get hard capped if you do a sign and trade, basically. So, that would be. I mean, we'll see what happens. But I don't blame him for saying that. And I mean, there'll be a lot of maneuvering. And but yeah, right. I mean, sign and trades are a possibility, especially this summer with not a lot of teams having a cap space. You know, if Paul George, like, I don't know, like, if he's like, I want to go to Portland, you know, I'm sure they could make it happen. I mean, that's the thing these days. Is if LeBron James said, I want to go to Milwaukee, I guarantee you they'd find a way to clear up money, you know.
Or if he wants to go to the Wizards.
If LeBron James said, I want to go to the Wizards. Goodbye, Otto Porter. Yeah, goodbye, Otto Porter. And
yeah, goodbye. And whoever else you want.
Is going to be, do they try and offload some of their money and give up a pick or something? Because, I mean, if you look at their future salary structure, it's not just, you know, last year and this year they're going to be paying the tax. Like, they're projected to pay the tax a lot in the next few years, especially when John Wall's salary jumps up.
His salary doubles. Close
to like $34 million.
Yeah. He's at 19 right now.
And
that's
so,
a $15 million
so
kick.
Do you give up that first-round pick and maybe something else, you know, to offload Mahimi, because you know that tax penalty is going to be such a burden later on? I mean, do you stretch? Mahimi and take on his contract the next 5 years, but lower the hit right now? I mean, you know, do you use Oubre to try to get off some salary? I mean, you know, because they don't have a lot of flexibility. And, you know, John Wall talks about, oh, they want this athletic center and everything, but I don't know where you're finding that with, you know, the tax pyramid level. So it's going to be an interesting summer for them, too.
I got to see if the Saints want to take Porter and Oubre and.
I mean, if I was the Pelicans, and they offered Porter and Oubre, I would do that for Boogie Cousins. Just because I think for how they played this season and like what they need. I mean, you know, I mean at that point, like if you're the Wizards, I mean you have no wing depth at that point. They probably had to keep either one of Oubre or Porter. But I mean that's an interesting thing, and that's. And that's the thing with Cousins, you know, do they say, hey, you know, we'll give you Porter, you give us Cousins, and then we'll throw in, like, second rounder
or
Satoransky.
Well, you got to keep your one pick if you can. And you draft my boy, the Red Mamba. The Red Mamba is leaving Maryland, going into the pros, Kevin Huerter. That dude is shocked me. I thought for sure he was going to stay. He could use one more year. I think if he had one more year, he'd get himself into the – top 13 there, but they got him projected. He was originally going to be like mid to late second rounder. Now they got him in the first round.
There was a team in the first round that promised him apparently that if he gets there that they'll pick him. I mean, that happens all the time. But
right.
Wizards yeah. could I mean,
take
he'll
him.
Probably be
a- if they that dude can shoot from. He's just going to get better and better. You know, the key for him,
yeah,
I mean, he's a Korver, but he can dribble the ball with either hand, pass with either hand, and his range is deeper than Korver. And I think he's quicker footed, and he'll be able to play better defense. And he's 6'7". He's got some length on. I tell you, he's more built for the pros than he is for college, I tell you. The new pro game,
and never have enough wing in today's NBA either.
Exactly.
If there's anything that's been taught. The Wizards got caught in their situation was you know paying two centers you know a lot of money, and Jason Smith basically is also a center too, so it's just. They could definitely use some more wing help. But also, they could maybe get a younger big guy, too. But we'll see. I mean, I think they need to keep that pick. They haven't had a pick three of the last 4 years.
I agree.
So I do think they need that youth movement.
I agree with that. I agree. Hey, man, should we touch base on baseball, the Nationals?
Yeah, I can do that real quick. Immaculate inning.
Impressive. He impresses me all the time. How about the other night, that 14-inning game where he gets a hit and then scores from first on the defoe, just playing fantastic. I tell you what, Jimmy, I got to be honest. The more I'm looking at Harper, I'm saying right now, I'd trade him. I would trade him. He got down into the 220s. He looks lost again at the plate. He hits some home runs here and there, but, man, he's striking out. An enormous rate right now. I tell you, I just try to get something for him. I know you're not going to get much because he's going to be a rental, but just something is better than just getting that pick for next year for losing a top free agent. I think you can get at least a top pitcher, someone's top prospect, or maybe two really good prospects. I don't know. I think you get something for him. I think it's the way Soto's playing. You got Robles. Yeah, they don't have the NHL and the power right now, but sometimes I just like guys that get on base, get hits, singles, doubles, walks. Don't get me wrong. I think Harper's a fantastic player, but you got to be honest. Unless I'd have to go to him and Boris and say, what are you looking for? Because we really can't go above where he's at already at 25 to 30 million a year. That's as high as we can go anyway. So if you are looking for more, we're just going to try to trade you. I'm just going to be honest. It's just a business move. We love you. But we got other players we got to pay. We got to pay Rendon. I mean, he's not going to cost as much. He's a great all-around player. Well, not great, but he's very good. I mean, you can see he slumps sometimes too, but I just love the guy. Are you going to keep your pitcher? Yeah, we've talked about it. Gonzalez. You got people you got to pay. Murphy,
yeah,
all of a sudden.
Honestly, I wouldn't trade him. I mean, if anything, they're not going to trade him, as a rule. But, even if you did, why would you trade him when his value is at, the absolute lowest? So, and also, I mean, for a guy who his batting average isn't good, but for a guy, he's still getting a lot of homers. He's still walking a lot, getting on base a lot.
He had 38 walks in April. He had 9 walks, Jimmy, 9 walks in May, 38 in April, 9. He struck out 38 times in May.
He's a positive impact, and he'll figure it out.
I agree with that, but you're going to lose him. You're not going to get nothing for him.
You're not going to get what you could. I think it's a bad message to send to the locker room, especially in the playoffs. Because, I mean, if anything, the Nationals need to add. And the thing is, you think we move on Harper, but we just have Soto and we have Taylor and we have Goodwin. But then one of those guys goes down, and it's just, it's one of those things where I think you just have to wait for him to turn it around. Because at the end of the day, you're going to need him come playoff time. And if he leaves, he leaves. I mean, it is at the end of the day. I mean, the thing is, if they were going to trade him, this is the same thing. This is the same thing with the Orioles with Machado. If they're going to trade him, they should have done it a year ago. And they wouldn't have, again. They wouldn't have done it in the middle of trying to, go in the playoffs and win. But, the time, what are you going to get for him for 2 months? I mean, is that worth that much more than the first-round compensation that you get? I mean, I just don't think so. If they were 10 games under .500, I'd agree with you. But, I mean, the thing is, A, why would you trade him now when his value is low? And also, here's the other thing. Here's also why you couldn't trade him. He's making $24 million this year, 25. I mean, who can really add $12 million in salary on their payroll by the end of the year? I mean, the Yankees can't even do that right now.
Well, they could, but they don't want to because their situation. They could. Dodgers could.
Yeah.
I think the teams that are in play for him for next year, that would be the move they would make. And I would think Dodgers would be high on that list.
I think both the Dodgers and the Yankees are very prudent on trying to avoid the luxury tax this year, just because once they get out of it for a year, the penalties are just so much more harsh. Just the same way it is in the NBA. They're not going to trade. I mean, because then at that point, why don't you just say, well, we'll probably not re-sign Gio, so why don't we just trade him and trade Murphy? I mean, it's just, I think you just got to, go one more time with this group, and then, they're going to have to make some tough decisions in free agency, but, maybe they just decide, hey, we have Defoe, we'll go with him at second, and, we're going to, you let Gio walk, and then you sign, someone who's a little less, maybe you sound like a Jay Happ or someone. I'm just random left-handed free agent. Maybe not as good, but also won't cost you any compensation. And you let Murphy walk too. And it is what it is. But I just don't know how much value you get out of Harper. I mean, the guy you get the most value of would probably be Gio Gonzalez at this point, because teams always need starting pitching. But at the end of the day, they're not trading any of those guys. They're going to go for it. I still think they're the best team in the NL East. That, at the end of the day, once they get everybody back healthy, I guess the real question is when they get Eaton back and they get Murphy back and they get Zimmerman back, there's a roster crunch on this roster, and especially with the way Adams has been playing, and Defoe has been good. I mean, he hasn't been great, and I think Murphy is still a much better hitter than him. But Eaton is a question as well too. I mean, Soto's been playing well enough. You can't send him down definitely, but do you keep him in and with Taylor too? I mean, Martinez backed Taylor a couple of days ago, basically saying, he's our starting center fielder. He gives us gold glove defense. I mean, there's something that's going to have to give. And I think, honestly, one of those things could be, maybe Murphy moves to first in some games and they play Defoe and Murphy, or, with Adams.
Another first baseman? We got five to give us four. I think Reynolds, you already see it. Well, you're already seeing Reynolds is slacking off. Okay, you're starting to see where he really is.
Well, yeah,
he's streaky. He's a 220 hitter basically. He'll get down to that number, but he's a home run hitter. He plays very good defense, and we do need right-handed pop off the bench. So again, tough decisions. I think Goodwin's definitely going to either have to get traded or. I don't know if he has any more time left in the minors. I don't think he does. But he would be the odd man out for sure. Because you got to keep Soto up. My God, he almost hit that opposite field homer last night. He would just look like a pop fly. But he gets on base. He can run. He's great enthusiasm. He smiles all the time. I think guys running around the base is smiling. He just cracks me up. But all those guys do. Defoe and Severino and they're just fun to watch and bring so much energy.
You're fun playing baseball, dude. You know,
I know, man.
It's all business. It's all business. God forbid you flash a smile or do a fist bump or anything like that.
Bullpen. I think this Miller. Very impressed with Miller, reclamation project from got himself in great shape. Good story behind him. His career was faltering, and he's got himself pitching good again. I mean, God, he's in mid-90s. He hides the ball well. I think Collins, he could be an odd man out. I like him. I think he's more just a lefty specialist. Looks in righties, he's definitely hittable. Grace just can't act. I think Kelly's on the ropes there. You really can't. I really still got to think you got to look around for one more relief pitcher.
I guess the issue with that is always that every single contender is going to be looking for relief pitchers. And I think if they go after someone, it'll be, it'll have to be in the vein of, again, like what they did last year for Doolittle and Madsen. They took on all that money, which to a team like Oakland means something. And then, for Kinsler, I mean, he was a guy who, I won't say like a one-year wonder, but was having his best season and was also in a contract year too. Those are the kind of guys. I mean, you just look around the league with teams that have sucky records. I mean, a guy like Darren O'Day, maybe someone who pops up for them. You know, a guy who's making $8 million this year and the next year. Like maybe if you take on all that money, then you don't have to give up a prospect. There's guys that they can get, Brad Hand or something like that.
Brad Hand,
around the league.
Brad Hand. How about the kid that came up and had the pitch the other day for Hellickson? Jeffers. I mean, I was impressed with him. He had to pitch this. Just had to throw him out there in the first inning.
That's the thing about relief pitching is sometimes, they've done studies that teams that pay a bunch for relief pitching aren't really the teams that a lot of times get the best production. That's because a lot of the best relief pitching is just these random dudes sitting in the minor leagues who throw 97 and just have to kind of just get it right. A lot of the best bullpens in the league are not like the ones who are, we're paying our closer, $80 million or something like that. And you also have to have a deep bullpen too. I mean, the Indians this year have one of the worst bullpens in the major leagues, and they have Andrew Miller and they have Cody Allen, but outside of that, I mean, they're just nothing. And so, I mean, I think at the end of the day, they'll probably add one more guy. I mean, the Nationals have, I want to say for every playoff run they've had, so 2012, 14, 16, 17, have always added relief help and then also just someone in general. So,
And I think they got a couple guys in the minors they could even still give a chance to, having good seasons.
I did see somebody mention maybe if Joe Ross comes back, using him as a reliever to kind of, because he's going to have an innings limit anyways, coming back from Tommy John. I mean, we'll see. That has happened before.
Right.
But, I mean, you got to keep your options.
No, oh, for sure.
And I think
that's for sure. I think he could do that role. I think he could do that role. I don't think Roark's good for that role. But
You know, or you know, just go real crazy. You know, Danny Espinosa, I think, just got cut. So just sign him to be a pitcher. He has a strong arm.
Hey, what about what I read this morning? Possible trade in Nats with, you know, Murphy's a little gimpy. You know, his bat's looking good, but he can, looks like, you know, microfracture can sometimes can take a couple of years. It was hopeful that he would come back this quick, but, you know, it don't look like he's going. I mean, so far, I think they're looking at it now. They see he's sort of gimpy running around the bases. I don't know. But a trade was, the thought was going after Spencer, Scooter Jeanette from Cincinnati, and maybe have to give up, you know, our top shortstop prospect there, Kai Boom. Kai Boom's brother, plays shortstop.
Key Boom, yeah. Yep.
Key Boom. I always call him Kaboom, yep. But I don't see a whole, I don't see a lot of Kaboom from him, but I like him. I like him, but yeah, the young kid, the shortstop,
yeah, I
really haven't seen, but I've heard a lot of good things about him. But to, you know, Scooter Jeanette playing second. I thought about it. I mean, I like it. He's a nice player, but
he definitely provides a lot more pop than Defoe does.
Yeah,
I mean, he's been one of in the last year and a half. I mean, you got to take it for what it's worth, but in a year and a half, he's been just one of the best, like, hitters in baseball in general, especially because for a second baseman, he hits for a lot of doubles, a lot of home runs. You have to see what the market is, and you have to see how Defoe is playing. I mean, like I said, Defoe's played okay. He definitely just doesn't provide a lot of value outside of, you know, hitting singles and stuff like that. And maybe they think they need more pop, but I mean, we'll see. I mean, it doesn't seem like a move they would make. Probably, I think they'd probably just try and stick with Defoe. Maybe they'd add more, like, again, like a depth in the infield, I guess. But I mean, we'll see. I mean, Jeanette is a possibility, and that's thinking more outside the box too, as well. So,
yeah.
Because I mean, you know, again, they already kind of have a roster glut, anyways. You know, I mean, if they add Jeanette, and then, I mean, Murphy is eventually going to be on the roster. You know, probably. I mean, maybe he's not. Maybe if, you know, in a month they just shelve Murphy, then that becomes a possibility. But I think as of right now, they're hoping that, you know, like, again, by, like, you know, July, that Murphy's going to be, you know, playing at least somewhat regularly.
Yeah, yeah. And then all good points. We just have to wait and see. A lot of tough decisions for Rizzo. I feel good that he's a guy that can, you know, make the, you know, it was records, as you said, not too long ago. It's pretty impressive. I don't miss him too much, and he protects the team very well. So I feel comfortable with him having to make the decisions.
Yeah,
I just brought up the Harper
thing.
I love
crazy.
Harper. I just brought it up for conversation.
I see where you're coming from. I just
my
think
mind
that,
wanders like
yeah,
that.
Again, it's a whole other decision if the Nationals are sitting at 500 right now, and they're looking at the Braves, and they're like, whew, you know. But I also just think it sends a bad message in the club. And I think Harper has become somewhat of a leader in there and things like that. And I think he'll turn it around. And if anything, Harper has shown a lot of his value in the playoffs, you know. And he's kind of a guy you need, especially when offense is so scarce a lot of the times in the playoffs, and has especially been for the Nationals. Well, I mean, I just, like I said, I think it'll be interesting to see how they balance everything when Eaton comes back. I mean, it's funny with Eaton, like, I mean, he's been such a tease. You know, when he's played, because he's played so well when he's healthy in April of last year, and then, you know, and this year when he, you know, originally, you know, played, you know, what was it, like 5 or 6 games as well. But, I mean, outside of that, just, like, he hasn't been healthy. And it's crazy how it's just, you know, I mean, you would think that they fell on their face with the Adam Eaton trade because he's barely played. But at the same time, it's like Giolito really hasn't been good for the White Sox. Lopez has been pretty good, actually. And then Dunning is just kind of, I guess, just been in the minors. But, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, like with Harper, and maybe, you know, especially if Robles was healthy, maybe they would consider something like that at that point. And they'll just go into, you know, next year with Eaton and Soto and Robles, and just say, we're going to have this athletic, speedy outfield, and, you know, try to find power when we can. But, yeah, I mean, Harper definitely well, let me ask you, just, do you think that if he – let's say he had signed a contract with the Nationals. Let's say it was 10 years, $350 million, just for whatever's sake. Do you think that he's hitting better right now? Do you think – or do you think he's putting pressure on himself, or do you think he's just in one of those slumps?
I just don't see him as one to put pressure on himself, but it could be part of it, even for him, at this highest level.
Because you see it both ways. Yeah. You see guys who, when they finally get paid, put a bunch of pressure on themselves. I mean, you kind of look at a guy like Ian Desmond right now and how he's playing in Colorado. Like you just start. I mean, there's so many stories of, you know, famous Yankees players, even guys who ended up being successful. You know, their first like couple months in New York just aren't good because they put a lot of pressure on themselves and things like that. I mean, and I think there's two choices. I really want to get paid really bad. You know, because it is amazing. Like, I mean, Harper is still having, like, if you look at total numbers, I mean, you know, he's still, you know, one of the higher guys like OPS and, you know, slugging in general and home runs and getting on base as well, even if taking a dip. But, I mean, you see, like, the difference between him and, like, the season Manny Machado's having. I mean, it's just, but there's still going to be teams come November, December, who are still going to prefer Harper. Even though you could probably argue that Machado's probably been a better player so far in his career.
I don't know about career, but definitely going much better this year.
Yeah.
I mean, Harper was, you know, rookie of the year, most valuable player. Probably would have been most valuable player again if he hadn't gotten hurt.
On
his way.
That is the one thing with Harper is that he's, especially with these Aprils, I mean, if you look at his April hitting history, I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, he's if every month was April, he'd be the greatest player of all time. I guess that's what makes it frustrating, but it just feels like he'll find his groove eventually. I mean, it doesn't seem like he's hurt right now. I know that's been not an excuse, but I mean, it's been a legitimate excuse in the past that he has been hurt with his thumb or his knee or something like that, and you can really tell, but it just seems like right now he's just, especially in the beginning, when he was taking all those walks, I think you were fine with it if he wasn't getting as many hits because he kept getting on base. And now it just seems like he's pushing it a little. I mean, he'll figure it out, I think.
I think a big part, he's got to cut down on the swing a little bit. I think he's back into that higher leg kick. And then I like to see him do like a young guy like Soto does at 19. With two strikes, choke up on the bat and just try to make some contact. Harper can make contact and hit a home run. He doesn't have to hit it 500 feet. He can hit it just over the fence with just making contact.
Yeah.
I would love to see that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, and I do think there was a point where, you know, in MLB history where, you know, striking out was seen as so shameful, and we got to the point to realizing where striking out can just be like any other out. And if you're striking out 30 or 40 more times a year, but you're hitting 10 or 15 more home runs a year, it's worth it. But we're at the point now where it's just like, just so many guys are just striking out all the time where it's just becoming like too much. Where, I mean, there was a point in sacrificing, you know, some strikeouts for power and things like that. And I get that. And that can be worth it. And there are guys who are just never going to be guys who are, you know, going to strike out only like 4 or 5% of the time. But I mean, like you said, it is nice that Soto just like he chokes up on the bat a little bit, because at the end of the day, and Soto kind of looks like a guy who is going to be able to, you know, build out pretty well. I mean, if you just look at a picture from him when he was like 16 or 17, and how he is now, he's already put on a lot of weight and good weight. And so, yeah, you're right with Harper.
I agree.
Like, you know, and I think it's a mentality too. I really think it's mentality. If you look at a guy like Murphy and how he approaches it and stuff like that, and just also how his swing is in general. So, I mean, it is a happy medium, and Harper has such a violent swing, and that's part of what makes him so good, is that it seems like so much is going on, but when he's on, even when a lot is going on, it looks perfect. But yeah, we'll see. I just want to ask you kind of real quick about some stuff, I guess, around the league in baseball. Clayton Kershaw has his back injury. Apparently been plaguing him, and he's back on the DL, and then he may come back soon or whatever. But it kind of seemed like forever that he was going to opt out of, like, the last 2 or 3 years of his deal. You know, and he's, you know, we'll see what happens. But, you know, Kershaw has been, probably the best pitcher in baseball the last 6 or 7 years. Like, do you think he may be kind of, I don't say at the end of his run, but, you know, another former Dodger great, Sandy Koufax, had his career derailed by back injuries. And every time I hear back injury, it kind of makes me, like, really uncomfortable, because I can't remember the last time I heard back injury and then anything good happened in the next, like, 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, and this is something that's reoccurring for him, too, the last 3 years now. So, where he was probably definitely one of the best pitchers, for 4 years there when he was winning all them Cy Youngs. He's putting up incredible numbers. He was so young. Probably maybe overused him a little bit too much. He just thought you could just keep throwing him out there. But he has that funky motion, which makes him interesting to watch. But obviously, over time, it's taken a toll on his lower back. So I don't know. He's iffy. I would be surprised if he opts out now. You'd think he'd be like Tanaka smart and not opt out and just get that money while you can. Because look at the Giants pitchers. You never know how it's going to end up. It can go quick. Well, I saw Lincecum just got released from the Rangers, trying to make another comeback. Still, him and the they had a couple other starters. You just kind of burn them out when they start going those high innings at a young age. But it's a trade-off. You know, Nats didn't do it with Strasburg and Zimmerman, and well, Zimmerman not so much because we weren't winning when we did it with him. But hopefully you're going to get an extra, 7 years out of pitching, but maybe you ruined your chance to win a World Series. I mean, I don't think the Nats did, because the Nats had the Cardinals beat without Strasburg. It was the relief pitchers that let them down. But everybody wants to keep throwing that up. Even Davey Johnson with his new book he admits that he was upset that they shut him down. He wanted to throw him out there. Don't surprise me. Yeah, he's the coach of the team.
Here's the
old
thing.
School.
There's a reason you have a GM in pro sports, and it's because coaches are very, very short-term thinkers. And I'm sure David Johnson knew he wasn't going to stay around very long. He probably could care less whether Steven Strasburg was pitching well in 2018. This is why you have people who are in charge of the long-term view of the franchise, because coaches would trade away all future picks and all everything. You know, I mean, it's just – they don't have GMs. I mean, we've seen that in sports, you know. I mean, they just – it's just one of those things where you have to have someone who takes a bird's-eye view of the situation, because it's so hard for a coach to do that, or a manager or whatever.
Right.
You know, because, when the Mets were in it, I'm sure Terry Collins could have given a rat's ass whether or not Matt Harvey is good in 2018. You know, like, I mean, all he cared about was winning the World Series. I mean, you don't necessarily blame him. And you're right. You look at the Giants and look at the guys they've used. And then you realize that, they won 3 World Series. Like, it was worth it. I mean, it's the same people who are like, well, you know, the Cavs, like, they've, you know, they overpaid JR and Tristan Thompson and da da da. It's like, they went to 4 straight finals. I mean, if that's the price they had to pay, that's the price they had to pay. But, you know, when Cleveland is in, like, ruins after LeBron leaves and they don't make, you know, they don't ever get a player like that again, I mean, you'll just, you know. I mean, sometimes there's prices you have to pay to win, but also it's just like, again, yeah, there's a reason why there's somebody who's in charge of a long-term view of the franchise. Because if it was coaches, you know, they would trade Robles right now for Brad Hand, you know? He's not helping us win right now. We'll get somebody who can help us win, you know? So There's a reason we have GMs and front offices, because and I mean, you can never know. Maybe Strasburg isn't the pitcher he is, and maybe I think they always should have handled it differently than they did. But you know, they were very clear from the get-go what was going to happen. It's just, I think at the time, the rest of the media wasn't caught up to it. I think people around the Nationals knew, and Nationals fans knew what was going to happen, and also they didn't expect to win that year either. So it kind of was forced upon them. But yeah, there's a reason guys are in charge of the long-term outview of franchises, and the reason that a lot of coaches are not that guy.
Hey, and you notice in the draft, tell me what position were the Nats focusing on in the draft? Pitching.
Starting pitching. Just pitching, yeah.
That's all they've been, because, yeah, they've let it kind of dwindle down a little bit. And got to build that thing back up for sure with the pitching. You got some really nice stuff.
Especially when they traded – when they traded three pitchers in the Eaton deal, and two of whom were at that point were their two top prospects before Robles and Soto really took off. Those were the guys who were supposed to be in the rotation right now, both him and Lopez. But, you know, and then maybe, you know, you won't sign a Hellickson or you move on from a Roark or a Gonzalez or whatever at that point. But, but that's also, again, it's the price you pay when you're trying to compete. I mean, the Nationals have done a superb job of keeping talent while also, building really strong teams. I mean, the fact that they even have, you know, a couple players in the top 100 of, like, you know, top prospects. I mean, there's a lot of teams who are good who don't have that.
And they have two outfielders. I think they're both in the top 10 now, aren't they, overall?
Yeah.
Soto and Robles.
Yeah, no, they're
two in the top ten. And those guys,
Dave, who were signed as international free agents, so, something that some teams literally just choose not to do, including the Orioles.
Especially the Orioles.
Just sell off their money. Yep.
Blow it off. Yeah, that's why they're just a weak franchise. Not a lot of hope there. It's too bad. I was down there last week. See the Scherzer pitch great against them, but the Orioles competed pretty well. I mean, they actually helped because the Nats just had a hard time scoring runs until they get some more of these weapons back. It's really been relying on the pitching starters, and then the reemergence of the relievers, kind of rebuilding the bullpen, doing a decent job. And I'm happy with the way Martinez is running things. Feel positive there in the division. You know, Atlanta's going to be tough, no doubt about it. They got pieces to make some moves. They can do it. Phillies aren't going away. They got money. They got some pieces. They got so it's going to be fun. To me, that's more enjoyable because we play those teams so much. At least the games are going to be competitive. They're going to mean something. Have a little tension to them. So I'm excited about that. You know, I just hope we come out on the right end, but we might not. Who knows?
I have the perfect trade candidate the Nationals should maybe target.
Yeah, who?
If they fully fall out of it, and they're only, I think, like a couple games back because the NL West is terrible, they should go get Hunter Strickland.
We're going to have another DC Strangler here.
I mean,
he'll be the DC really hitman. He'll be the hitman.
I mean,
hey, they're on the upswing, man. They're on the upswing. They just got five in a row. Yeah, it's wide open.
The NL West is such crap that, I mean, they got back into it pretty quick. It's not crap, but, I mean, no team to separate. I mean, the Dodgers,
Dodgers are right there.
500. Yeah, and now they're, I mean, it's just, it is crazy in baseball, the ebbs and flows and how much people will panic. I mean, think about how people were feeling about the Nationals, like 3 weeks ago, a month ago, and where they are now. Baseball is a long season, man. It's a long season.
Sure is. Sure is. You're right, Jim. Lots of ups and downs. It goes by the week. They play so many games. So much can change. You win five in a row, you lose five in a row. Like we're playing Tampa Bay. They've had And I heard last night they've had multiple 5-1, 5-win streaks and 5 losing streaks, losing 5 games in a row. They've already had like 4 of them, losing 5, winning 5, losing 5, winning 5.
Yeah. What do you think of them having like their like starting off the game with like a reliever when like they think the matchups are in their favor, and then just following the starter after that? I think that's pretty like. I mean, if you're facing 3 right-handed guys, and you know, and that's the only time that you can really set a matchup in the beginning. I think it's kind of innovative. I mean, you have to have guys who are willing to do it.
Just flip-flopping it
so far.
Well, Steve Phillips, you know, was kind of breaking it down. I've heard him mention this a few times, but you know, they got some young starters, and then the idea is then for not to face the best team's players right off the start of the game, to bring in the veteran relief pitcher to kind of get you through the top of the order, and then maybe bring in your young guy to face the bottom of the order. And by the time he faces the top, he's already kind of warmed up, been involved in the game. So, interesting thought. He's just kind of flip-flopping it.
Especially when the most runs in baseball are scored in the first inning.
Oh, is that a Jimmy stat there?
Yes, that's a stat. Yeah, the most runs in baseball score in the first inning. In fact, the team that suffered the most woes from that this year has been the Orioles. I think they've given up like by far the most like first run inning runs in the league.
Yeah, I kind of like the way that kind of thought, man. But I tell you, man, you watch the other thing now. These shifts are becoming amazing. They have changed the game. They move these guys, you know, put almost, you know, the other night, these guys can't hit the ball. They struggle just to hit the ball to the opposite field. It's wide open for them. You can see guys trying to do it. They just can't do it because it's hard. And also,
I also think that's kind of like intimidating. Like, I mean, like if you're up to bat and you see that nobody is on that side and it seems so obvious to hit it there, but like it's hard to there's not a lot of guys in the league who have been able to like pinpoint the ball with accuracy, and then you start screwing with your swing because you're trying to hit it the other. And so, I mean, that's kind of the point, is there a lot of these shifts, especially for like these, you know, power lefties or power righties, is look, if you hit a little dribbler to the other side, you know, we'll take it. But what we don't want you to do is, you know, hit something to your pull side. So, I mean, it seems easy. It seems easy to say just lay down a bunt or whatever. But, I mean, I think it's kind of intimidating because, like, that's everybody in the stands is saying the same thing. On TV, they're thinking the same thing. But if it was so easy, then these shifts wouldn't be a thing.
The hardest thing to do in baseball is just to hit the ball in general. But then to try to hit it to a certain place got to be even more difficult. But you're thinking, I don't even have to hit it. Yeah, yeah. Some of them are just drastic. I mean, we're even like, say, Rendon's almost near second base. But then you get that opposite field pop fly, and the guy's got to run a mile to, like, the stands. they can't get to it. It'd be a basic play. And then you always hear the announcer always go, well, if he was in his normal position, that would have been an easy play.
It's not perfect, but mathematically it plays out better. I mean, the information they're using for these shifts are years and years of data. I mean, they have guys' minor leagues data, too, of where they hit the ball. And, I mean, you know, it's not perfect, but the thing is lining up straight isn't perfect either. There's always going to be holes on the field. They're just trying to cover up as many of them as possible. And I think, you know, like take a guy like Matt Adams, for example. If Matt Adams hits a little dribbler down the third base side, I think the other team just takes it at this point. I think they'd rather have that than him have him, you know, hit a home run, you know? But hitting against the shift, people, I'll just bunt it to the other side. It's a lot harder than it looks. And if people could just do that, then there wouldn't be shifts. So, everybody can do that.
And bunting definitely – do it? We done?
Yeah, I was going to say you're done. What was the last thing you were going to say?
Yeah. Yeah, I was just going to say bunting's just a lost art, too, man. Guys just really struggle bunting. They have a hard time even getting down, you know, sacrifice bunts. And Yeah, Jimmy, real pleasure talking with you. We'll enjoy the game tonight. Hopefully, Caps will talk. Caps will be Stanley Cup champs next time we talk, and looking forward to that. It's been a long time since one of my teams have won. It would be 30. It was 1991 when the Redskins won. It'll be, if they win tomorrow night in Vegas, it'll be 40 years since the Bullets won theirs in 78 to the day. 40 years to the day.
Oof.
So hey, it's been,
you,
and that's
well,
what, and
you,
that's,
you, I was going to say, you soak it all in. Because at that point, if it's from 91 until now, you better hope you don't croak until the next time the DC team wins the championship.
I won't be around, or I won't even be able to. If I am around, I'm 58 now, so another, I'd be dead, Jimmy. It ain't gonna be pretty. Let me tell you, I won't even know what's going on the screen if I'm still alive. So let's hope this starts a trend. Let's hope if the Caps can help pull this off, and then maybe it's the Nats year because they've been befuddled. I don't see the Wizards. I don't see that much of a chance there. But I'm really excited about what they're
doing.
I'm really excited what the Redskins are doing now. I got to be honest. I think for the first time since Snyder's regime, they're finally doing things the right way. I'm very excited about the Redskins. We'll talk about that next time.
We'll see. I mean, the Alex Smith experience is sure one that'll be interesting.
I can't wait. I am so excited for Alex Smith. All the things I'm hearing, and the throws he's making, the way he picked up the offense.
He's very good.
Vernon Davis was with him in the early years at San Francisco. He said, "This ain't the same guy. This ain't the same, you know, they ain't the same guy I played with in San Francisco 13 years ago. This guy,
he's
confident.
He's good. I mean, yeah, we'll have a lot of time to talk about football. I just, you know, third and eight, when he throws a little crosser in like 4 yards is when you're going to want to pull your hair out. But we'll see what happens. All right. Anyways, Dave, thank you for joining us, as always.
Yep.
You have a great day.
All right, buddy. Take care.